How did you get started as an English language teacher? Talk me through it.
19 years old, I had to make a choice to do something, and at that point, I really wanted to do arts, but my parents weren't that keen. So I was very good at languages and thought, right, why not? Well, I'll go and do a degree in English language. But I ended up in a teacher's college. So I didn't get a place at the university I wanted to. It was very, very competitive. So I did do it, and I thought, right, I'll do the degree. It does have all of the programs that I need, and I will become a translator, interpreter, something that way. But it never really happened. I went through all the training, all the courses, and your teacher training and schools and various other places. And that's it. I kind of fell into it. And it wasn't initially a plan, but I really enjoyed it. So I kind of realized it was very hard, it was difficult. Teacher training is it's not easy. It's really difficult. It's very, very stressful. There's a lot of pressure. But I liked working with, especially with little children. My very first job when I was still in training, still at university, I was teaching a private school, little 4-year-olds. And I still remember all of their names, their faces. They'll be in their 20s now.
Wow,
Yeah, they were like
that's
20.
amazing.
Yeah, so that was 20 years ago, and they were 4 years old. They may have their own families right now.
Yeah.
Probably graduated from university themselves. So I still remember the little faces, and it was such a lovely job. And I just thought it really suits me. These children really listen to me, and they like me, and I enjoy it. And then it just one thing led to another, and the rest is history.
That sounds like a beautiful journey, Olga. I was
Yeah.
wondering too, what type of art would you create?
I come from a very small town, and fashion wasn't available then at all. I was making my own clothes, and because I was quite good at
Wow.
drawing, I would go and buy something plain, like a plain t-shirt or plain dress, and just paint on it.
That is creative. That is amazing.
So that's what I wanted to do, really. I wanted to go into fashion,
Huh.
but then
Do you still do that now? Like play with
I
clothes and stuff?
do. I stopped when the kids were very little, but now they are, well, nearly 5 and 7, so they sit down with me. And they start noticing, Mom, you're so good. You really I can really draw. Draw a really lovely bird yesterday. So I do it with them now, because now they have a longer attention span. They can actually leave me alone, not
Yeah.
grab everything and just make a massive mess. Yeah, I'm going back to it.
That is
Slowly, I am returning. And my son in particular, 6-year-old boy, he's 7 in March. He wants to learn knitting.
I think that's pretty
Cool.
cool.
And he's actually quite good at drawing as well. I want to learn to sew, to make my own clothes. Just create a lifestyle really around it. To teach, because I really enjoy it. If I won the lottery tomorrow, I would probably go back to university and do a degree in art.
I would love to see like your, do you have a portfolio or some
I
drawings that
do from years ago, actually. I had some stuff on Facebook. All hidden away in the loft, really, on my dresses. You really hoping to go back to it. And at least do it not professionally, but just for myself. At some point to combine art with English.
Okay, yeah, you should
Do
do that.
something
That is
like
so
that in
fun.
English then. So work with professionals from those industries. And
Yes.
work on their English, but also take something from them. So collaborate with them in that way.
That would be.
That constantly in the back of my
You
mind.
should do that. I think you should go after that. That's if this is something from
Yeah.
younger till now and it's always on your mind, you need to listen to your soul and do that because then you would flourish. And I think you'll get a lot of clients too because the art is everything and language is
Agree.
everything. So you're combining those two worlds, you'll get massive
So yeah,
interest.
some people say finding a niche is so important, because then
Yes.
you speak the same language, and I'm not talking here about the language itself. Like you said, you've got the same ideas of how to live a life, what to do 9 to 5 to feel complete, to get up in the morning, get excited. Yeah.
Yes. Where it doesn't feel like work.
Yes, correct. Teaching does that to me, because teaching is so
Yes.
incredibly creative. lesson planning is really creative.
Yes.
Very. I find it different age groups have probably different needs in terms of creativity. Adults not so much. Adults like dry stuff. They like predictable things. Grammar. Yes, they're to the point because they need it for tomorrow.
Yes.
Whilst the younger audience, so like anyone below 16, 4 to 16, they don't have to pay the bills. Boring things, you know, every month, the end of the month to pay.
Yes.
Electricity, gas and whatnot. So they need the creativity. They want to be bouncing about. And
do you prefer to teach adults or children in your classes?
Right, so I have evolved, and the older I get, the more I'm set in my own ways, and things that I compromise less these days. So in terms of teaching, I do prefer adults. And for a very specific reason, personal to me, I love to work with adults in the UK. And because you've got such, it's just thousands and thousands of people who just don't do what they could do because language is a barrier.
Okay.
And there's this, I think it's personally, I think it's a bit of a myth that adults learn languages slowly or slower compared to children. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think it's an individual thing. Adults have some adults have a credible motivation. Like I said, when there is a bill at the end of the month to pay, they will sit down and they will learn it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's no longer a choice. So they will find the time, they will find the motivation, and they'll just get on with it. With children, children think that they have eternity. They think they will live forever.
Yes, yes. And be children forever.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen children who, you know, who live in at home with both parents speak, let's say, I don't know, a French to them, and they don't pick it up. Notice that. How many children are out there who don't pick up a second language from home? Mm-hmm. My kids haven't yet. That could be due to some sort of dyslexia, dyspraxia, some sort of learning, slight learning difficulty. Mm-hmm. But learning a language is not easy. And I don't think age is the factor, because, and the reason why I'm saying that is because I've worked with a lot of adults recently, the last 10 years, for 15 years. I've worked with adults a lot, and in the last couple of years, predominantly adults, and some of them make incredible progress.
Wow.
Very fast. So I teach very intensive 8-week courses. What's 8 weeks? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see them from barely speaking the language to going out and doing a job interview for an administrative job.
That's amazing. That's phenomenal.
Unbelievable.
From in 8 weeks. In the
market. So from somebody who was stuck in shelves, they now have the confidence of the language to go and apply to be a supervisor in that shop.
That is phenomenal.
So adults for me at the moment, because I just feel like adults need, children get enough support. Adults don't, they just don't. There's nobody to model cuddle them. There's nobody to say, look, you're good at it. And they need spoiling as well, just like children.
Yes.
And I think that's a selling point for any English language teacher who works with adults. Adults, they actually told me that, they crave your attention. It's like you become not the parent, the carer, somebody who cares about them. And I've had one lady who told me that she really hated me at the beginning of the course and panicked. Was that something to upset me? No. I was jealous of your attention to other students.
Oh,
yeah, because now you're an adult.
Because you actually pay attention to them.
Because
and care about them.
Someone else 2 minutes longer than her. And she said, I wanted you for me all the time. And I heard that quite a few times. My words. Wow. Nobody really says that. When you go to teacher training, you never hear it. You only, because the research, I believe, I'm starting to get off research a lot now these days. I'm really relying on my own experience.
Empirical, yeah.
And 18 years of experience is research. It's a lot of research. Working with people. And adults, teachers who teach adults, they don't just teach them the language. They become the person that looks after their needs.
Mm-hmm.
Their personal needs, the social needs. Financial as well, often. Always.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
So you become that substitute parent to those adults. And they're really, they like that. They need it. Everybody needs somebody to look after them.
Yeah.
When you have I had a lady recently who was in her 70s actually.
Wow. Her
boyfriend passed away. Her children moved away. Her husband's very ill. Had an open heart surgery or something. And I became that somebody who looked after her.
That support.
Yeah, somebody who looks after them. Somebody who will remind them of things. Even things like reminding them about homework. It's like you keep an eye on them.
Mm-hmm.
There's somebody who cares out there. That's why I prefer adults because I know that they do need to be cared for.
Yeah, as teachers, we have so many hats, and as adults, they take on so much responsibility that they forget that they need that support. So that's amazing how you are so attentive to your students like that. And
they keep saying, keep asking for me, can we have her again, please?
Oh, that is amazing. Because you care, you have a heart. You put your heart out there.
Yeah, because I know that I am an adult myself, and I would love someone like this as well. Like,
right? You want a cheerleader. We all want cheerleaders.
Yeah.
We want that.
Everybody needs somebody to look after them.
Very true. Thank you. That is beautiful, Olga. I love it. I hope that everyone resembles and encompasses this in their teaching philosophy. And is it necessary to have a side hustle or an additional source of income while teaching, Olga?
I think it depends on the circumstances, really. Last year, made a very difficult decision. Initially, it was hard for me. But I took on a very small part-time, 2 days a week admin job as well. But that job is my little financial security. It's no-brainer, literally. It's quite enjoyable. So at first, it was supposed to be for 6 months, and I've been there 18 months now. And I decided that there's no need for me to give it up. I work from home, pleasant, it's easy compared to teaching, super easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it gives me, because I am that kind of person. I'm not a risk taker. Okay. I've never been, and I probably never will be. And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's me. People need people like that. I mean, the world needs them.
Stable people.
Yes, little minions like me.
You said minions.
Little minions like me. The world needs us. I think that the world needs more of us than the risk takers, right? Because otherwise,
then the flighty people.
The normal grey people. The beige jobs and greyish lives, you know.
That's always reliable. Won't have shiny object syndrome and just run there. And
people who are happy with an electric heater.
For 10, 20, 30 years, yeah.
Exactly.
Are you somebody talking about me, Olga? No.
Somebody has to do all of it. So
I'm just being funny.
It depends.
Yeah.
If it's somebody, if I didn't have a family, I wouldn't.
Okay. You wouldn't do the administrative job.
Not go for side hustles. I would just go straight for it. Unless I was, I don't know, getting evicted or something. Extreme. Something extreme was happening.
Yeah.
But if I didn't have to, if I didn't have a family, I would not go for a side hustle because it is distraction. Believe it or not, it is. I was watching the other day, I quite like watching Joe Rogan.
Oh, okay.
Some of the things that he says are quite smart. Some of the things, not everybody, no one's 100% smart. Not nobody. But he said something really smart, and somebody's asked him, why do you think people do not take risks and just go for like an entrepreneurial business? And his answer was, bills. We all have bills. I couldn't do it. I had 3 children, wife support, bills that were coming in every week, every month. I had to do what I had to do, even if I didn't like it. But the bills were coming in. Those kids needed to be dressed, they needed to be fed, they needed to be put through schools. Bill.
Very true.
And I thought, yeah, it really depends. So if I was a person today without any commitments, I would go for it. Even if I was to, I wouldn't even be bothered about like owning my own house, to be honest, because that will come again. Even if you were to lose it. I know a lady who did it, lost her house initially, but that was not even her start in the business, but she lost her home, went through a divorce, blah, 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 and she's got it all back again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I would, because life, I think the older I get, the more I am aware of my mortality. But I am Joe Rogan, I have bills. It's BILLS. That's what makes me, I have to have a side hustle. I don't really have a choice. Because I have to buy school uniforms, I have to buy school shoes, and I have to, they eat every day, these kids. They eat a lot. So, yeah. And you don't just want to clothe them and feed them. You want them to have some sort of quality life.
Mm-hmm.
Nice Christmas, you know, a holiday once every 5 years. In a tent.
In a tent.
On a real thought. I think it really depends. But like I said, if I was somebody without commitments, I would not be bothering with something that I would not be compromising.
Yeah, yeah.
I would rather rent a room somewhere from somebody, live cheap, and just go for it. That's me. It gives you such a boost of energy. It just gives such a, adds value to your life, really.
I could see that. That was a lot of sound advice you've given there about if one was in those different predicaments in their life.
I think you hear, you know, all these influencers like, go for it, take a risk. But they don't say everything. What they're not saying is that, look, you may lose your home, you may lose your status, blah, 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 the car that you were driving, the holidays that you were used to. So what? Take a step back a couple of years. You will get it back. You will. Just do it. Get you out of bed in the morning. It's expensive car on the driveway. It doesn't really get you out of bed for the first couple of weeks. But if you have to do the same horrible job day in, day out, you would not enjoy it. It is not if you don't have to.
Thank you. I know a lot of listeners will resonate with that. That was like an eye-opener.
Listen to that podcast from Joe Rogan.
Okay.
And he said it. So no matter how wealthy you are, you have bills. Firstly, my dog had very serious surgery. That was thousands of pounds.
Yes.
Putting the door down or fixing him. So we fixed him.
Yeah.
Side hustle. We fixed him. If I didn't have a side hustle, I don't know. Put him down. Terrible, right? Once you have dependents, that changes everything. But if you don't, go for it.
What is a favorite lesson in your classes that you like to teach?
I love teaching speaking and pronunciation, really. Such a misconception. Students do not understand that pronouncing any language, it's not your predisposition, it's not what you hear, how you put your mouth, your tongue, and a lot of practice. And anyone can pronounce anything anyway with good practice.
Pronouncing, yeah, that's definitely true. People need to hear what you're saying. And if you don't pronounce a word correctly, it can definitely become misunderstood.
Yeah. It's your tongue, your teeth, your mouth. If you put all of it in the right place, it will come out right, but you've got to practice it.
Did being an English language teacher inspire you to learn a second language yourself?
Well, English is my second language. Okay. So for now, I'll probably give it a break. But I would love to do it again. I would love to learn another one. I have my eye on Arabic.
Okay. French.
I did French at university, but it's, you know, use it or lose it type of thing. But Arabic in particular, it's just flavorsome. It has this fabulous sounds, and then it's just so different than any other language I speak.
What are some warm-ups or introductions that you share in your classes?
Right, so this really depends on my group. Now, as I said, most recently I've been teaching adults, and adults like routine. They are not into fun stuff, you know, teamwork, let's put ideas in a poster. They want to go straight into learning because time is precious for them. It's really, really precious. When I have mothers literally breastfeeding the children as they're learning, making dinner for them, they don't have time for fun lessons. They don't like it. So what I do with them, they love it when I do revision from the previous lesson.
Okay.
And I do it because I teach online. I do it in a fun way. I use Wordwall, which is fantastic. So I do short tasks, which last about up to 3 minutes each. And I will do 2-3 of them. As students are coming in, settling, da-da-da, I do a quick revision. It could be something fun now and again I do as well. Sometimes I would put a song out, approaching Christmas, some holiday. I also like my university students because those are very intensive courses as well. There is no time to waste. So what I do as a first task, it's called dirt task, I give them feedback from the previous lesson. So I would usually mark pieces of writing from them, and I would show them on the board most common, without naming and shaming, most common mistakes as a collective overall, and give them some tasks to work on it. Because those students come in for 12 weeks and they are preparing to go to pass the exam. They're getting ready to pass an English exam so that they can start university. Deadline is tight.
Yes.
But it really depends. But if I was to have a group of teenagers, depends. Teenagers are funny ones, the challenging ones. But I've worked extremely challenging teenagers for a very long time, for 13 years. Believe it or not, they do not like creative stuff either.
Oh, really?
Hate it for quite a few reasons. One, schools do too much of it with them. I call it poster making lessons. Teachers are coming with pastas and we're doing dancing. And these students don't feel like they're treated seriously. Why are the rest doing serious work and we doing this, miss?
Mm-hmm.
That's one reason. Reason two, many of them have no routine at home. No boundaries. Solid grammar task gives them a routine. It's A plus. It's 2 + 2 = 4. It's predictable. It's safe.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them safety. So I try, my lessons are always structured the same way. Like in a course book, you have each unit, each task, so you have a listing, then speaking, reading, da da da. And I do it the same way if possible, as much as possible. That is the only research that I believe in. I was taught from my university teachers when I trained back in 2001 at Sarsfield University. Students love routine.
Mm-hmm.
I call it fancy schmancy, you know, whatever. It's not for everybody. I've had them saying, most people came here to learn to read, not to bounce around.
Yeah, little kids, like babies.
Exactly. But then teenagers who are very settled, you call them authentic people, so they are serious, and you can do fun stuff with them.
You just have to learn how to incorporate it.
Because the more challenged students, you can't get them into, if you do fun things, how are you going to get them something serious straight after? There's just no way. They're hyper and they would just be all over the room. I had one, my colleague came out, she was a math teacher, she said, well, Did I make a mistake today? Silly me. She brought spaghetti pasta.
Okay.
Speaking of pasta.
Yeah, like food, yeah.
And they had to make some sort of shapes out of it. You should have seen the room within 7 minutes. It was like a tornado went through it. Pasta tornado.
Jesus.
Never.
But the teenagers.
Yeah, they were 14, 16. To register somewhere all this new thing, teaching methods. Somebody did the research and they had so much fun with it. Not with these kids. There was pasta everywhere.
More cleanup everywhere. Than teaching.
And on the top of that, one of the girls had something. Oh, she was then observed the next time. Had a teaching observation. The bag was moving with the kids. One of them brought a dog with her.
How did the dog get past the teacher? It must have been a really tiny
little
dog.
Chihuahua. Yeah, so she says, I'm being observed and something hustling in the bag. So going back to the warm-ups, you really need to get the feel of your group and your age group and their needs as well. So adults and time is super important for them. I wouldn't be doing any sort of fun stuff. Because like I said, fun stuff, they're doing their own time. They need to do things quick. They need to go to work tomorrow morning. And tomorrow morning, communicate with people, the supervisor. Tomorrow morning, they have to make sure they are safe at work, operate big machinery in a safe way. They understand health and safety tomorrow morning. It's super important. I use technology a lot, especially for warm-ups. Like I said, word wall, quick tasks, quick matching tasks, like memory tiles.
Yes.
Or a jumbled up sentence. Not like, I remember years ago, there was this theory to do a wall map that has nothing to do with a lesson, with your subject. And we had to do it. You should have seen. Surprise, we no longer have to do it.
It didn't correlate together.
The one thing that I started doing more now is a 1 minute mindfulness with my students. Because you've got three things that are super important for learning. One is exercise, food, water, and oxygen. Then also need to calm down. Some of them, you don't know, people walking through your door, you don't know what happened to them. Anything could have happened. So you need to get them calm and focused. I wasn't taught how to do that when I was doing routine training. That was 20 years ago. Now, thank goodness we've got that. So yeah. I'm looking into that more and more, do it more kind of adult appropriate.
Do you have any teaching philosophies that you follow in your class?
Common sense. Why I say it. I've been through schools, colleges, universities, and gazillion of teaching methods. Some of them were ludicrous. Absolute waste of time. Nonsense. Newly qualified teachers, they come up with these. This is going to be a short answer as well. Our professor at university sat at the table. He must have been late 70s, 80s. So he's kind of past retirement, but he was a good professor. He used to translate poetry, three different languages, how smart the guy was. And he's sitting there. And we all had mobile phones even at the time. And he didn't have a watch, but in his pocket, he had, you know, these old fashioned alarm clock between your table. And he kept taking it out. We were really polite, very polite. What do you think about this method and that method? And we just bombarded with these suggestopedias and whatnot. Kalan methods at the time was very popular. He summarized in one sentence. There's only one good method. Open a book and learn. I no longer look at methodologies per se. I would look at tasks, how to differentiate your tasks. So if someone has done something creative but not too much. I mean, methodologies. Methodologies, they come and go. One is routine. Two, you've got to know your audience. So you need to know their needs. Like I said, if they're adults, don't waste the time. When the children, it depends on the behavior. Don't do crazy stuff with kids that struggle with the behavior. You're just going to have chaos in the classroom, that's it. And somebody will come into your lesson, observe you, and tell you that you can't teach. No, you can. It's just you use the wrong methods. Three, very important, if you can, give people resources in advance so they don't come in surprised. Nobody likes to be surprised. And caught not knowing something, especially people with low self-esteem, and that's regardless of age. It could be 4-year-olds, it could be 50-year-olds, doesn't matter. My son actually said, Mom, can you ask my teacher to give me work in advance so I can have a look at it? I don't feel embarrassed when I don't understand something.
That's profound.
Teaching English, follow the way we learn languages, actually. When we're babies, we first listen, then we speak, then we read and rewrite. And that's how I structure my lesson. This is how you learned as a baby. I don't change that. I'm not going to change biology. Keep your lessons simple and also give people a lot of feedback. And seriously, stop talking. You need to let them speak. So your teacher talking time needs to be a bare minimum. In particular, when you work with challenging students, the less you talk, the more they'll listen. The more you talk, the more chaos you have. Quite literally. They're on the windows. When I left, I bumped into one on the metro, actually, the other day. Where have you been? Where you've left?
I've been away from you!
We're still waiting for you. And I thought, 2 years ago. I know what you're talking about. And like, we actually learned from you. And we wanted to learn from you.
What cultural norms did you encounter while teaching your students?
Probably all of them. From religious. When you talk about norms, where were they from? Iran.
Okay.
They said to me that the way they brought up is God, teacher, parents. I mean, I don't want to be before parents or God. They treat teachers with in such high regard. Them teachers are extremely important people.
That's amazing.
First, listen to your teacher, then to your mum and dad, part of the world. Teachers get a lot of respect. So I wasn't quite aware of how much and how beautifully received teachers are on a daily basis, how they are celebrated.
Like, I was wondering if, what if their parents was also a teacher? Would they also be aligned in that level? Education actually starts at home, if you think about it. So their parents are teachers.
Students further in Asia, China, who would say to me that copying word by word the teacher's work, though, like they say, teachers publish a book or some sort of course book, something. Is regarded as honorable and respectful, and so respect is just another thing that was culturally just a bit of a shocker. Students try to give the gift, expensive ones. In the UK, we have to, when we sign a contract, it's the bribery act. One of my colleagues came to staff room and she had she opened the package. There was a watch, very expensive watch. She went pale at that point because that, you know, you've signed as kind of a case of her running after the students down the hallway. Take it. I can't take it. Please take it away from me now. So that was quiet because you wouldn't get that here at all. Also positive.
That's very a beautiful positive way to show appreciation. I understand it could be a bit conflicting.
I mean, the intention is good. And it was at the end of the course and students already passed.
So then maybe she could have accepted it then, since the kids are done.
What we had to do, we had to ask for permission if it was over a certain amount of money.
Like the value of it. I think that's a great way to appreciate teachers. Every teacher needs something that luxurious because teachers are actually very underpaid.
I 100% agree.
What's one thing you wish you had known when you began your teaching career?
Take all of these methods. Theories with a huge pinch of salt. They are just theories. And also, only my advice, my genuine advice to anybody at any point in their teaching career is to only read research and books from people who are teachers, who still teach, and also talk about a specific group of people, specific social group, financial age group. And they know their staff, the subject specialist, that actively teaching. That I've had covered so many theories, and then you try to put it into practice. And you start scratching your head, thinking, what's wrong with me? Because that's who I am. I always look at myself. How bad, why am I so bad at it? This wonderful person released this amazing research, such good, had such a great reception allegedly all over the world. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. My students can do it. It's because it didn't work, because that person didn't, on a sample of, let's say, 100 people. Unless they are fully qualified, they have enough experience, and they do it today. Actively doing it. They're not observing someone do it. They are doing themselves. Still today.
Mm.
That I wish I knew. because it's extremely confusing. And stay true to yourself. And also, defend yourself. We don't talk about it enough. Teaching observations are horrendous. They can break people. And also understand that if you've planned a lesson, spend a long time doing it. You've marked the homework. Somebody says to you, your lesson wasn't good enough because it was overplanned. What? What other profession would you say to a doctor? Excuse me, you've looked at your patient too much. Thank you, doctor, that you were thorough. But teachers all over the center, and people need to understand. I wish I knew that teaching observations can be something that is a tool to do something sinister to the person. And it happens quite often when a teacher is expensive, when a teacher is close to retirement and they cost a lot of money. All of a sudden they become poor, and it's easy just to do a couple of observations, tell them they can't teach and get rid of them. And then offer them 2 weeks later similar post but a lot less money. I wish I knew all of that, because that can happen. I've seen that happen to other people. Hence I came out. This was the main reason why I came out of mainstream teaching. Because I thought, I'm getting older and I don't want to be risking that. Not 20 years of my life. I'm not willing to put that on the line. Stay true to yourself, believe in yourself. Only look at the teaching methodologies from people who actually do it. Do the walk, not just talk to talk. That may be a bit controversial what I just said, but that's true. That's what it is. Because you can find yourself trying things that don't work for your students. It never will work for your students. And then you'll find yourself in a situation they are misbehaving or not attending. And you are trying to fix yourself. Just looking at the method and thinking, wait a minute, do I need to do it? It's like with cooking. You get a recipe, you try and bake a cake, and it's disgusting.
Advice, and I know our listeners will definitely take.
Everybody will listen to me. I hope everybody who listens, if they do, please just make mistakes. Oh my god! Because you had one bad lesson, so what? Lesson plan. There is a reason why it's called a plan. If I was to rob a bank tomorrow and I had a plan, didn't go to plan.
Yeah,
I didn't get rich. I'm in prison. You know,
yeah,
like happened circumstances, you know, something popped out from somewhere. Like when I worked with those extremely challenging students, Mondays were the hardest. Now, why? Because they had a whole weekend to fall out.
So trying to get back into that was hard.
Yeah, to like steal boyfriends, girlfriends, to go on all over social media and just spread garbage all over. They come in on a Monday and they actually are not speaking to each other. You don't know that. They're angry with each other. They want to hit each other. They want to be physical with each other in a bad way.
Jeez.
Fridays are also, people say Fridays are the hardest because the end of the week, and they're a bit more disruptive. All fall out, have massive arguments and fights and all sorts. So your teaching methodologies, forget about them. They're 14, they're 15 years old, they don't have the emotional intelligence that you do. Somebody said that, I don't know, her extensions were disgusting, and that's it. Fight. Your stick-on nails are cheap. Fight. Why do you look at my boyfriend? Fight. They'll be teaching methodology. Oh, try this, try that. They are in angry mode. Yes, you need to get that down first before applying anything.
Yeah.
Your planning's out of the window. You didn't rob a bank. I've met so many experienced teachers who got lost along the way because there's some new teaching methodology that they've been teaching with however they taught for 20 years and it worked. And now, you know, there's something new kid on the block that did this and did that and you don't do it. And the students are not complaining. The results are great. Why are you fixing something that's not broken? What's the problem with you? Unless there were complaints, unless... the results are poor, then change it by all means. But they're not. And then these teachers are trying to change everything that they have done for 20 years, 10 years, 5 years, 2 months. And it doesn't work for the students because your students love what you actually were doing before. I've had students saying to me, what are you doing this for? You just do what we were doing. It worked. Soon that. I don't have a choice. I have to do it. This is the very, not bad advice, but sneaky be a bit more sneaky. I wish I knew that. Do what you need to do in the classroom if it works, and if you have to, hide it. If it's good.
Good intentions.
Find a school who purchased a specific software, paid a crazy amount of money for the software. They want you to use it.
Because
they invested in their money. They can't show their face to the Mandarin to show, look, you made a mistake buying this nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will be making you do it. So only do it when you're watched.
The software, yes, a teaching aid or device. Sometimes you don't even need it. Better to teach privately or at an actual school?
I think it's good to have a bit of both. In schools, you top off everything. So although, like I said, I'm not particularly, it's not that I'm not keen on new teaching methodologies. I'm careful with them.
Yes.
I'm a lot more skeptical than I used to be. I don't just jump at them. Why am I doing it first? Because they have the resources. They have the contacts that you as a private teacher will not.
Yes.
But then private, it's your own baby. You do what you want to do. It's your own home. So yeah, sky's the limit. So do both, I would say. I quite like being both.
Do you have any English language business or a course that you are operating? Or
yes, I teach online and I have my own students. I am now starting a new course because I've seen there is a massive demand for it. Okay. 6 weeks intensive speaking course for adult professionals who are at least intermediate. And there are specific topics that I will cover. And that includes pronunciation.
Okay.
Elocution and intonation. So students literally prepare week by week various presentations which they can use on the social media pages. So let's say 1 minute topic one would be 1 minute presentation on just themselves. This is what I've done. This is what I represent. A lot of feedback from peers and myself. Yeah. Stay at work. But in English, another example of a topic is to do a presentation on a service or a product. Depending on the job and whatever they do. One would be their choice. They'll be pitching something, ideas. So very much business English, but with two things that are super important today. One is social media, so they can use that from the course. They'll be recording it and it will be there for them to later use. So if they want to attach a short 1 minute video to their CV or resume, they do that, job application. So yeah. So mainly speaking, but I also teach anything from IELTS to general English to English for academic purposes, pretty much all of it. Love teaching GCSE English language, which is on British curriculum. There's a bit of literature there. I love 19th century literature, so that's Charles Dickens, that's Dracula. I love quite like it. This is my personal thing. I enjoy doing it.
If you enjoy doing it, your students will absolutely have a passion for it too, because it exudes out of you. They'll feel it and then they're like excited as well. That's fun that you like what you teach and the students will be receptive to it. Do you have any goals that you want to share?
My goal is the same as it was last year. It's to teach from home online, not 100%.
Okay.
85%.
Okay.
So have my own business and work with those adults as much as possible. After 20 years, I feel like I need more. I have been inspired. I mean, know if you've seen Stutz, American psychologist, Phil Stutz. There was a movie that just came out on Netflix and I watched it the other day. Is the psychologist who has written the book called Tools and with another guy. I can't remember his name. Thinking of going into something with psychology, like research.
Okay.
I would like to break some myths.
Debunk.
Debunk, all right. The myth of adults learn languages slowly.
I think you should do a research paper or just bring awareness about that, because
case studies that I have worked with.
Yes. They're here.
I know that they can and they do. And I know how children don't often.
And I bet you have also other teachers that have experienced the same thing where adults do learn quickly and rapidly whilst children at another pace.
Another goal is to get more technology involved teaching. and also really promote online teaching, remote learning.
Okay.
There are a lot of myths about online teaching, I believe, is just nonsense. There's no engagement, I don't think so. I think we've engaged pretty well when we're online in different parts of the world. So these are my goals.
And where can people find you on the internet? How can listeners get in contact
with me? It's probably LinkedIn. I'm on it all the time.
Oh, God, this was an amazing conversation. I enjoy speaking with you.
Love talking about myself.
And you are just an amazing and phenomenal teacher and person. And so, yeah, thank you for coming to the podcast.
And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get notifications of the next show. Talk with you soon.